It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are you today?
I am doing outstanding. The weather is decent, especially for this time of year. And you know what? I can't believe, John.
Lots of things.
A lot of things. That is exactly true. I can't believe that we're in our eighth month of producing these shows.
And they haven't figured it out yet.
Time flies when you are really having fun, and we are really having fun. So,
Absolutely. We are definitely having fun. I hope the listeners are enjoying the format, the show, kind of relaxed. You know, grab your cup of coffee, sit back on the couch, and let's just talk a little common sense finance. Common sense. There's an oxymoron, isn't it?
Well,
but anyway,
common
let's
sense,
talk about
John.
Some common sense financial information.
Well, I do have my coffee. It's right here. It's really good coffee. And, of course, that's because it is from the Chef Shop.
There we go.
Chef Shop, located at 2320 Troy Road in Edwardsville in the Schnucks Plaza right next to Target. Scott and Nancy, continue to underwrite the show. We appreciate that. We want to say thanks again for helping us to bring forth some good common sense financial information every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on WSIE-FM, The Sound.
So have you heard the expression, no good deed goes unpunished?
I have heard that, John. I have.
I am living that.
And how are you living that?
Well, you know, we rescued Murphy.
You did.
Murphy is a black lab pitbull mix. Murphy, yes.
He's a wonderful dog.
Most times. Not sure about Murphy's past. He was full grown when we got him. But
he's still
I'm
cute.
Guessing he had a lot of freedom
because
he likes to run. He's cost us a lot of money as we've put in a new fence to keep him in. Then he chewed through the lattice around the pool. So then I put new lattice up. He chewed through that. So then I put lattice up a chicken wire. And then he found a new spot to get out. So then I bought some 1x6s and built a wall.
Wow.
Trump's not the only one trying to build a wall. I built a,
did you have
a
Mexico
wall
pay for
to
it?
Keep him in the yard. And he then last night dug underneath. Basically, he dug his way out. And, you know, with being the mix that he is, I don't think he would ever do anything, but you know, he's a big dog, and
he wouldn't. You've brought him to the office on multiple occasions, and he wouldn't hurt a flea. I mean, we, you know, our family, my daughter's family, has had pure pit bulls, and continues to have, and they're wonderful dogs. And Murphy is just big, playful. I know one day I was playing with him, and he accidentally, you know, went after the toy and missed and grabbed my wrist. But you know, other than that,
and the 75 stitches, you know, there's no
yeah,
big deal.
Well, you know, other than that. No, he's a wonderful outdoor dog.
Yeah, that's the problem is we can't keep him in the yard. And you know, like last night, one of my neighbors was out, and she's in her 80s, and she had her little dog, and Murphy was running around, and I was trying to get Murphy, and I'm glad that she didn't fall or nothing happened, you know, to her. And I just had to inform the family that we have to give him back unless we can find him a home. I would, if any listeners out there are considering, I would recommend that you have a farm. That way this dog can run because he does, I think that's what he's used to. And he's very close with my daughter, and my daughter is very close with him. And we'll just say that daddy's not the favorite person in the house right now.
Yeah, his nickname is Houdini.
Yes.
If you have a large yard, large family, a farm, anything of that, and you're interested.
Concrete reinforced.
You're concrete reinforced. Yeah, I wonder if Trump thought of that. If you build a wall, they'll dig under it. Is that, you know, maybe part of the plan?
Well, it was his version of a tunnel. It certainly was. Yeah, it was an impressive dig. I will say that much. He went through a lot of dirt to get himself out yesterday.
Well, I hate to see it, but you know, you have to be aware of your liabilities, which is something we'll be talking about more. Good lead-in, John. Today, both on a commercial and personal level. So we have insurance for that, but avoidance is always the best policy.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, you know, we've had them for almost a year, so it's been an ongoing. We started off with a chain link fence, and then we learned that he can climb those, and we put in a new fence, which was not cheap, and he essentially chewed through those, and now he's digging underneath. It's
Houdini. So.
Houdini. Yep, Houdini. There we go.
So Houdini Murphy.
That's my sob story. I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, that's all right.
So
no good deed.
No good deed goes unpunished. So let's jump into In the Market.
Oh yeah, finance. That's why we're here.
You know, we could probably do a call in. Well, I can't do a call in, but do a psychology show. You're a good listener, Mr. Lexow.
There we go.
All right. So inflation.
What's that?
Well, yeah, the government doesn't think we have any. But since we had a pretty good pickup here, even for government numbers in January, the CPI core inflation jumped to 2.5% in January, which, of course, will have the Federal Reserve, looking at raising rates a little more closely now to try and keep inflation in check. But what I wanted to do was provide, and we have done this in the past, but provide the listeners with a little background of what CPI, or the Consumer Price Index, is, how inflation is measured, and how the number that the government reports is bogus. Put it in simple terms. That is the technical term.
An accurate statement.
So CPI. Essentially, it's the Consumer Price Index, and the government looks at various industries such as housing. They used to include food and energy, but that didn't work out for them, so they stripped that out. But we'll get to that in a minute. But they look at all these different industries and how costs have increased, and that's what they use to measure inflation. However, they have changed the way that they calculate inflation. So looking at some of the categories, and this is some dated stuff because they've changed it, but there's housing, transportation, medical care, recreation, education, apparel, other goods and services, and so forth. But housing was obviously the biggest component. Since 1983, they have made three changes to how CPI is calculated. So Larry, if you had a TV that was 20 years old and you paid $150 for that TV, and you wanted to replace it because now it wasn't working, and the TV that you're going to replace it with is $500, would you consider that $350 difference to be inflation?
I would consider a portion of that to be inflation and the other portion to be technological advance.
Interesting, because the government, I look at replacement. The government actually would say no. And in an example that I was reading here, it was actually negative inflation. But they said no because of the technological advances. You're paying for all these things that the TV has that your old TV didn't have. Where I look at it is I paid $150 in order for me to replace this. Now it's going to cost me $500. That's $300 of inflation.
Yeah, regardless of how much more advanced it is. I get it.
So, but the government says, no, 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 no. The advances, your TV was old and the advances are so much better and so forth that actually it should cost you more money. And when they ran the calculations, they came back with that was a negative inflation adjustment.
Yeah, well.
I love government math.
Government speak.
Government math. Speak. All right. So then they also changed. There used to be housing cost was the what drove the inflation numbers for the housing sector. But now they changed that to owner's equivalent rent.
So, I'm sure they define that somehow.
Yes. Yeah, so what they said was they were using the owner's equivalent rent statistic, which is basically flat. I mean, there isn't a whole lot where the housing is up and down. And you look at the way the chart goes for the housing inflation adjusted for inflation, positive and negative, because in 2008 we had the beginning of the housing bubble that burst.
Depression.
And prices came down and rents pretty much stayed the same. So I would contend that rent really isn't much of a good statistic to measure inflation, but the government does like this smoothing, and I will get to that in
a minute.
Of course. And then they also made another change, which was called, well, hedonics was the TV, that the term hedonics was the TV example that I gave, and product substitutes. So in 1999, CPI began using product substitution as part of the process. This simply means that as prices go up, consumers will substitute the originally designed product with an alternative. So if your family loves steak and the price of steak goes up, the family believes you will stop purchasing steak and will buy hamburger. This is our government here. And so why are they getting rid of this volatility? Why are they artificially trying to keep inflation low?
To make us believe something that isn't true.
In the 30,000-foot view, absolutely. So why is the CPI? Essentially, what the government has done is they've gotten out of the true inflation measure and have gotten into trying to predict consumer spending behavior, which has nothing to do with
the cost of items. The true economic definition, because I have the internet and you don't, of inflation.
I thought you were going to wow me with your wisdom, but all you do is look it up.
I did.
That's all right. I'm reading off the paper.
General increase in prices and fall in purchasing value of money. So the television is a good example, but I relate much more to your steak example. You could.
And you would.
I would. Steak and potato man here, but the fact that it is much, much more expensive to buy meat, to buy poultry, to buy eggs, to buy what I consider the staples of good eating today than it was last year or 5 years ago or 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And I think that is one I work with clients and we look at budgeting. We'll tie it back, loop it around, tie it back when you do a budget. How much are you spending in your budget on food? You know, how much do you eat out? Is that something that you feel will continue in retirement to that extent or to a greater extent or a lesser extent? How much, is that going to go up? Because eating today, if you spend, and you pick any number, you know, any arbitrary number, but, you know, if you spend $100 a week for food today, which probably is way low, but you spend $100 a week today in 10 or 15 years, you are going to have to spend $150 to $200 to just buy the same stuff. So if you don't factor inflation, which is purely what that is, into your plan so that you have additional income 10, 15, 20 years down the road, then you're going to not be eating steak. You may not even be eating hamburger at that point.
Right. Yes, your definition and example is spot on to what inflation is. There's also something called shrinkflation, which I will get back to shortly. So why is the government artificially keeping inflation numbers low? Well, let's look at a couple things. One, the debt has an interest rate associated with it.
Yes, indeed.
If rates go up, because inflation is, quote unquote, going up, or recognize that it's going up, the interest payments on the debt goes up, which means the government has to pay back more money, which means they'll just borrow more money, print more money to pay themselves back the money that they owe themselves, or actually us, the taxpayer. So that doesn't work well. Politicians don't get reelected when you have a high inflation number. And Social Security benefits are adjusted for cost of living, or what used to be cost of living. So I have a website that I use. It's called Shadow Government Statistics. John Williams is the host, the owner of the website. And he has kept track of the CPI pre-1993 changes and then pre-1980. And the inflation number for the pre-1993 today, where it's being reported, as I mentioned, at 2.5% for January, back in December was around 2%. The pre-1993 is pretty close to 6%, where inflation would be if we were using the formulas that the government used back then. And if you go back to the pre-1980, it would be closer to 10%.
Imagine that.
So think about the Social Security adjustments that we, as taxpayers, have paid into the system. They are artificially keeping those adjustments for cost of living artificially low, which is hurting us in the long run.
It is hurting us, and particularly those folks who only have Social Security or only have Social Security and a modest income from some investments. I'm thinking of one of my 90-plus-year-olds who is living on Social Security and about $100,000 in investments, which she draws off a 4 or 5% a year, and we're keeping up so far with a good investment policy. But that's it. And fortunately, she came from a farm family. She owns her house. She still has a lot of land, which she could sell, although she refuses to do that at this point. But you know, she's doing okay. But she is feeling it. You know, she makes the decisions. You know, do I go out to eat once or twice this week? And do I go to Hardee's or not to endorse any specific brand? Do I go to a low-cost establishment, or do I go to someone where I get a little more elaborate meal and spend a little more?
For the past 37 years, her Social Security benefit was adjusted to the true cost of living as opposed to the government's version of consumer spending habits to smooth out. How much better off she would be if it was true.
Well, and playing devil's advocate, because I like to do that, John.
Especially with me.
Especially with you. You are right, exactly, that Social Security should be going up significantly more, and the government is, without question, manipulating the inflation numbers in order to not raise Social Security significantly on a year-to-year basis. However, anyone who looks at the news knows that within, depending on who you ask, the next 10 to 20 years, Social Security, even at the current lack of increase in rates, is not going to be able to pay out what it's bringing in. For the first time in history, there will be less money coming in than is being paid out. And, of course, that's never a good thing. So
2015 was the first year that they started liquidating the bonds.
So, you know, that's not a good thing. So if they were not artificially keeping the rates low, we would just run out of money that much faster, which takes me back to a much bigger issue of Social Security, in that the calculation when they designed the system and implemented it, which my parents were some of the first who came into the system after it was implemented, they paid in far less than what they received in benefits, because the original system assumed, you know, if you retire at age 65, that you might live a year or two or three, and that would be it. And, of course, my father and mother both lived well into their 80s, so the actuaries really bought the outhouse on that one, no pun intended. And that is also a basis for the issues with our pension systems today. There's a transition to the state of Illinois and the issues we're having with all of the pensions, whether it's the state university retirement system, the SURS, whether it's the TRS, the teachers' retirement system, whether it is the state's own pension system for their employees. But the actuarial assumptions on the amount of contribution was significantly underestimated, and they find themselves at 60 to 70% funded only, where it should be 90 to 100%. And the fact that the people who are retiring on it are going to live, potentially into their 90s and beyond because of healthcare and advances in medical. So something's got to give on all of it. Social Security will change. There's no question about it. How it changes, I guess we'll see. The pension systems have got to change, which many of them have already. New teachers coming in, new employees coming into the systems will no longer benefit from the rich benefits that were promised to the original folks in there. And I'm not saying that's good, bad, right, wrong. I mean, you can argue, I could easily argue every side of that. You know, it was a promise, so let's stick up to it. But what's it going to take to hold up to it? And can the rest of us afford, you know, going from paying 1.45 and 6.2% in the Medicare and Medicaid for Social Security? If it goes up to 10%, as an employee, can you afford 10% going into Social Security, which is what it might take?
I have the answer.
Go ahead, John. Tell me the answer. I want the answer.
So we just use what's called the burrito index. So here we have Charles Smith.
I'm not going to touch that one.
Charles Smith has come up with the burrito index. He has been keeping records since 2001. And in 2001, the local taco truck to get a taco was $2.50. In 2010, it was $5. And in 2016, it was $6.50 for him to get his taco from the taco truck. That is a 160% increase. Over that 15-year period, the official inflation rate was much less.
No doubt.
The $6.50 burrito that he is paying in actual dollars should have cost or would have cost $3.38 had the taco truck stuck with the inflation numbers being produced by the government. So if we just stick with the burrito index, get rid of all this other stuff, we'll have a much more accurate assessment of the health of the economy. Not necessarily the health of you as an individual if you eat too many tacos, but it'd be a good barometer. And on that note, one last thing is inflation, as Larry mentioned, is, you know, the dollar can't buy the same amount of stuff 5 years from now as it does today. We also have what's called shrinkflation, where the products that we're buying are actually smaller than they used to be.
And that's just wrong, John. That is just wrong.
Yeah, it's a sneaky, and that doesn't get factored in. But anyway, that 5-pound bag of sugar that you used to buy, it's not 5 pounds anymore. It's 4. Mm-hmm. So that is a 20% inflation right there.
Well, it is buyer beware. And you touched on something that's near and dear to my heart, because I will admit that I got taken advantage of due to my own lack of attention to detail. I was getting close to, it was in December and year end. I always look for what are the things that I'm going to use in the normal course of business in the next, you know, January, February, March, first 90 days of the year that I would buy anyway. I'll buy them in December so that I have them and I can deduct it in last year against my taxes. And I was looking and I had a box and a half, 2 boxes of cases of paper. But we go through a lot of paper, particularly in the first quarter. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to check. And it is a very popular business store. I won't mention their name. They're local to Edwardsville. But it is a national chain. And they had on sale, I normally pay, round numbers I can find.
Didn't that just merge with another very popular?
They did, yeah. Oh, okay. But I won't mention who. They normally, I can get paper for about $28, $29 a case. And a case is 10 reams and 500 sheets of 5,000 pieces of paper. I'm okay with that. You know, I'll go in that range, $20, $28, $30 a case. And there was an ad that came up on my email from this reputable store. And it said that special deal, order 3 cases, and they are only, I think it was $23 a case. And I'm like, wow, you know, year-end sale, this is great. You know, I'm going to be able to deduct it on my taxes for 2016. I'm going to have 3 cases of paper. They'll get me through the first quarter of the year. I'm paying, you know, almost 25% less than normal. And I ordered them, and they showed up the next day. By darn, they were there. And the guy delivered them, put them in the storage closet. And for some reason, in the back of my mind, I kind of, you know, was busy, and I thought, those boxes don't look as big. And I just kind of, you know, let it go. And one of our administrative assistants needed paper, and I took it back to her, and I unloaded the case and put it on her cabinet. And I'm like, doggone it. I don't think that's what I said. But anyway.
For radio purposes.
There were only 8 reams of paper.
No way.
They shorted me 2 reams of paper. So I bought 4,000 sheets for $3 instead of my normal 5,000 sheets for $29. And I was mad. I really was. I felt abused, taken advantage of. My own fault. I don't blame anybody else. I didn't read the fine print. So buyer beware.
A case can change.
A case is not a case unless it's a case. And unless it contains 10 reams of 500 sheets of paper.
Exactly.
So buyer beware, make sure you know what you're getting because you may get less than you suspected, as I did.
So that wraps up our soapbox platform on inflation, the government, and never trust government statistics because they just lie.
Pretty much.
Moving on. Well, we were going to have a visitor, a guest in for the show today, but
business banker.
He could not make it, so we're going to postpone that. So our regularly scheduled interview will be postponed. And what we wanted to do today was touch on a couple topics that we have talked about before that we've gotten some updates on. And since we are approaching tax season, Mr. Larry had a couple tax stories to talk about. But what I wanted to touch on was the fiduciary rule and the state-run 401k plans or IRA accounts. We actually spent 3 episodes where I went on my
tirade.
Was it tirade? I guess
it was tirade.
It was tirade. Okay.
Yeah, it was bigger than a soapbox, so it was a tirade.
Okay. So that's how it works. So we know. There's been some changes, and we're moving in the right direction. The fiduciary rule, as we touched on, was where broker-dealers would be held to the same standard as a registered investment advisor to do what's in the best interest of the client. That's very simplified definition of the new fiduciary rule, which is supposed to take place April 10th. I believe it will because to delay it or change it is not just – it won't get done in time. So I have a feeling it might pass, and I think actually if it gets implemented, it's just going to be that way. But we'll see. Anyway – There's 4 reasons why, where did my 4 reasons go, that this probably will stay put.
Are you going to touch on the background of it a little bit?
Go ahead.
I will
pontificate.
As
I look at pontificate while I find my 4 reasons
pontificate.
Why your pontification won't change anything.
As for all years that both John and I, and many good advisors, approached our clients is we will not ever recommend or utilize a product as a solution to their needs that is not in their best interest.
Or we wouldn't use ourselves.
And our mission statement for Nickel Investors is not to implement or use any product that we would not use for ourselves given a similar situation, time frame, risk tolerance, et cetera, et cetera.
You have that memorized.
Almost.
Et cetera, et cetera.
Et cetera, et cetera. So we have always acted in the best interest. And I often ask a client, why would someone not act in your best interest if they're representing themselves as a professional? However, there are those in our industry who have in the past worked for broker-dealers, and broker-dealers are legally... because it is a legal issue also, are legally held to a suitability standard, which means that they can sell a product, which many of them do, that is suitable. When you get an advertisement to go to a dinner meeting or a lunch meeting or a breakfast meeting, and they are hawking, if you pardon the word, but I think accurately, a product, then they are salespeople. They are selling a product. They're bringing you in to tell you about their product. When they know nothing about you, about your circumstance, about your needs, your goals, your wants, your objectives, and in my opinion, that's not the way to do it. It's not the way we've done it. And those who meet a suitability standard will oftentimes get you into a product that you later realize was not in your best interest and really doesn't meet your needs and may indeed cost you a lot of money in lost opportunity. and gains and so forth. So slight soapbox there. But so suitability is the standard of the industry for broker-dealers and registered representatives. And lo and behold, about 6 years ago, in my recollection, the Department of Labor started talking about developing a best interest standard. Registered investment advisory firms, of which John and I are both a member of Nickel Advisors Corporation, which is a registered investment advisory firm. We are considered IARs, or investment advisor representatives, under the RIA. And we, as fiduciaries, admitted fiduciaries, are required to act only and first and foremost in the best interest of our client. Well, the Department of Labor said, you know, RIAs are supposedly doing this already. Why isn't the rest of the industry, and why are a lot of people being introduced to suitability standards and products that may be suitable but not in their best interest? So they began went down the road of developing a Department of Labor fiduciary rule, which was indeed introduced after 5 years of discussion back and forth in April of 2016, scheduled to take effect April 10th of 2017, which we are almost there. So we're moving from, if the Department of Labor rule goes into effect, from anyone dealing with individual retirement accounts, IRA rollovers, for example, anyone dealing with 401k, profit sharing, any type of qualified plan, any type of qualified money will be held to a fiduciary standard, which is a best interest standard, which does give the client, the customer, the individual we deal with, additional legal ramifications if the advisor does not act in their best interest. So that's what's coming April 10th, unless for whatever reason that it may be changed. So that's the, we're heading for a suitability standard. John and I are already there. We don't care. That's what we're doing. It's what we've always done.
Best interest.
Best interest standard. And the, you know, we'll see what the rest of the industry is doing and has done.
Yeah. And as we talked about in our previous show, we already serve in that capacity. Our issue with the new fiduciary rule was the overabundance of required documentation and paperwork. It will be burdensome, without a doubt. And I think there are ways to accomplish what they want to accomplish with the rule, without making our lives really just become paper pushers, because we would be spending so much time doing all this other stuff and not really as much time taking care of our clients as we would like to. So with that in mind, there really will be no way for the government to delay between now and April 10th. The APA, the Administration Procedure Act, requires a 90-day notice and comment period before the Trump administration could make such a change. That's not going to happen. Three courts have considered every conceivable flaw and found none. Very unlikely that some new flaw will be discovered. Another court could delay the applicability date, very unlikely to occur before April 10th, even with the support of the White House. Congress could act to waive the 90-day requirement, but that would just be a disaster. That would unleash a political firestorm, and Democrats would certainly prevent that from happening. So what we see happening is the April 10th date, in my opinion, will happen. And if the government is going to make such a change, it would be after that. So we'll keep on top of this for you, as for our business owners and so forth, and any other advisors and so forth that listen to the show. But that's where that one stands. I also wanted to touch on my tirade, but some states have tried to enact a state-run 401k, or they call it a auto IRA or something like that. But essentially, it's a 401k plan that is sponsored by the state. So we'd be trusting the government with another bucket of our money. There are some requirements to be eligible if you have over 50 employees and so forth and so on. You would have to have the state plan. California and Illinois have been kind of the leaders in this, and they are a disaster. The reason why they're a disaster is they want to do all these things, but they wanted themselves exempt from all the rules and regulations that those of us that do this for a living are held to. So the government's going to hold us to a standard that they themselves do not want to be held to. There are a lot of choice words that I would like to use to describe that, but I'll just stick with hypocrisy to be polite.
Hypocrisy, yes. I think that is an accurate statement that, well, it's kind of like our representatives and Congress people not being held to the same health care of Obamacare. They have their own plan. They're not being held to the same pension requirements and contributions that the rest of us are. So there's a lot of things that Congress says, you know, you other 350 million people, this is what you're going to have to deal with. But, oh, we're not going to do that. We're going to make our rules different and have a much better plan, much less costly and so forth. And that is hypocrisy. And there is a lot of it out there.
And the states are trying to spin it that they would be a lower cost solution to what the private sector is offering and so forth. That's just not true. In our previous episodes, there's three episodes that we did on this. We explained and gave a clear-cut example why the fees associated with these types of plans would be more expensive than when you can get in the private sector. And then the investment choice. Someone who's 20 would be forced to be in a treasury-type investment to help the government continue to fund the debt and their deficit spending. But someone who's 20 doesn't really need that in their portfolio. So it was just a bad program, bad solution. And I am very happy to say that the House voted. This came in last night as I was planning on talking about one subject. And then this came in. I'm like, well, that just kind of changes everything. Let's rewrite the script for today. But the House voted to kill the DOL state city auto IRA rules. And the House voted 231 to 193 in favor of the state resolution, 234 to 191 in favor of the one governing cities with basically along party lines. So the DOL regulations encouraging states, municipalities to create automatic enrollment payroll deduction IRA programs for private sector workers by exempting such programs from federal retirement law, ERISA. Killing the rules will be an attempt to stymie the creation auto IRA programs, which five states have been developing. And this is good news. If the state wants to do this, then they should be held to the exact same standards that they require anyone else in this business to do. A level playing field, no hypocrisy. And then let's see which entity produces the best solution for their clients. And I guarantee it won't be the government.
Well, and a good example of that is the state university retirement system, because when you look at, and I have many clients under SURS in Illinois, and they kind of, they march to a beat of a different drummer because they are not subject to ERISA currently, and they have very odd vesting rules. They have very odd eligibility transfer rules. So unlike qualified plans, ERISA, that all of the commercial accounts are held to, the states pretty much try and do, under the state pensions, do whatever they want. And I think that's a big issue with why they're in trouble, because they had been doing what they wanted and playing around with funding standards that they shouldn't have messed with, that would not have been acceptable under a standard-defined benefit type program. So I think it's good news. I hope that that filters through, and the states like Illinois, California, many of the others who are looking at their own IRA programs and retirement programs find that they just put it on hold and stop pursuing that.
I hope so too. Of course, you know, there will be appeals and so forth, but for now it's getting the attention that it needs to be getting. It's being presented that, and the information is getting out on how bad or how wrong this idea is. And hopefully we'll get to where they actually are exposing why the states and the federal government have an interest in trying to move this forward. So it's good to know that that has been halted for a little while. So that put a smile to my face.
Well, John, while you're smiling, let me fix that.
Taxes.
It is my absolute least.
Good
least
feeling gone.
Favorite time of the year is tax time. I spent 3 hours yesterday meeting with my accounting folks and going through taxes. If you are well organized and things are well documented, it probably isn't as painful as it is otherwise, but
it's still painful.
You have to take a look at you have sources of income that are documented in various ways, depending on what type of entity that you are. If you're a sole prop, then of course it goes on a Schedule C. You have your gross income. You have expenses that are divided into categories, which are listed on your Schedule C as far as advertising, depreciation, automotive, taxes, professional fees, going on down the line. You know, everything you spend that is qualified for that as an expense for a business goes into one of those categories. The end result is you're on a Schedule C for a sole proprietor is your net Schedule C income, and that is what you then pay FICA and Medicare on, as well as federal and state tax. So there are clients out there who are realizing, it's too bad, too late, too little, too late, realizing that they had a really good year in 2016 and their net Schedule C income is higher than they anticipated, and thus their tax bill is significantly higher. So it's that time. All corporations, if you're not a sole prop and you are an S corp, so you're a corporation with being taxed as an S entity, then you again do your taxes, which have to be filed by 2.5 months after the end of the tax year. So if you're a calendar year S corp, they have to be filed by March 15th, unless you extend. And at that point, you don't really pay any tax because all of the profit from the S-Corp then rolls over on what's called a K-1 statement, which the S-Corp issues to you as an owner and other owners, and it rolls over to your 1040, which is your personal tax return, and goes in on page one as income. It is income you don't pay FICA and Medicare on, so you should be taking a reasonable salary from your S-Corp in addition to that which flows over as a distribution, which is not subject to FICA and Medicare. So once it all hits your 1040, then you have to kind of look at, okay, where can I save money? What are the things I can do with my S-Corp, with my sole prop, to be able to reduce my taxable burden? I had an example. I had another agent who came to see me a couple of days ago. She is working with a client who is in a field that has very, very little expense, but is well paid. It's a professional field. And she had a gross income as a sole prop of $170,000 last year. And her husband, who is in, I believe it was an engineering field, is what I was told, has a significant salary. So we're talking about a couple's, double income, no kids, is my understanding at this point, of well over $300,000. And they were preliminarily looking at a tax bill approaching $75,000 and $80,000. And the question from the agent who came to see me was, what can we do? And the good news is, I said, we have a couple of things that we can do. Number one, we will set up, if they are in agreement, once we explain the process, we will set up a SEP plan. That's a simplified employee pension plan. It's the only type of qualified plan that can be set up after the end of the calendar year, if you're a calendar year filer. So we can set it up right up to the point that they file their taxes, the March 15th deadline. The SEP allows them to take up to 25% of her adjusted gross income, or her net Schedule C on a sole prop, and put 25% of that away pre-tax, without paying any federal or state tax on it and into a retirement plan. So right off the bat, we can save her, I think I guesstimated, I ran a calculation quickly, about $15,000 to $20,000 in taxes that she would otherwise have to pay, which means that a fairly significant amount of the money she would send to Washington, which they do such a great job in spending it, would remain in her account for her future benefit. So that, in any sense, I think would make an individual happy knowing they could save $15,000 to $20,000 in taxes and put it in their own account for their own future benefit. The second thing I recommended is that we go ahead and set up a 401k plan for her for 2017, since it's too late to do that for 16. The 401k plan now not only allows us to put in 25% of her net Schedule C income as a contribution to the plan, but it also allows us to maximize her 401k deferral. She is in her 30s, so she would be eligible for deferring another $18,000 in addition to the 25% of her compensation. So all in all, for 2017, we would be able to put away at her salary income level about $54,000 into a retirement plan for her future benefit, thus saving her, you know, $20,000-$25,000 in taxes that she would otherwise just, you know, be spending, sending into the federal government and the state government. So if you are an individual who is scratching your head going, I really don't want to pay all this tax, and if you are a 1099 employee, which would file Schedule C, or if you have an entity, a corporation treated as an S-Corp or a partnership, which may be taxed as an LLC or a partnership or an S-Corp, give us a call because we can head you in the right direction. You can work with whoever you want, but at least I can tell you what your options are for both 2016 and 2017 because the tax laws are there to be utilized. If you're not taking advantage of them in terms of being able to put money away for your future, then shame on you for not doing the time and the research. And we can help you avoid a lot of that by a simple, what turned out to be a 10-minute conversation. And I was able to save this individual, you know, $10,000 to $15,000 to $20,000 in taxes that they otherwise were not aware that they could be doing. So there's a lot of opportunities out there. There also are opportunities for funding if you are an eligible medical plan. We'll get back to that. If you have a high deductible non-first dollar reimbursement medical plan, then you would be maybe eligible to do an HSA or a health savings account. I plan on maxing that out for myself and my wife this year because we are in a $6,000 deductible medical plan that we pay the first $6,000 out of pocket. And we can put the max into our HSA, which will save us another $4,000 or $5,000 in taxes. So between that and doing 401k or SEP or even just funding an IRA, an individual retirement account, you know, putting in your $5,500 or $6,500, as long as you have earned income, you can put that money away for retirement on a pre-federal, pre-state tax basis, which is pretty significant. So with about 12 minutes left on the show, taxes are yours to decide to a great extent how much you pay and how much you don't pay and what you're able to put away for the future. So be aware of it. If you have a good accounting person, and this was the other question I was asked by that agent representing her client, well, why hasn't her accountant told her this before? And I go back to the basic assumption from years and years and years ago. There are two types of accountants. One type of a basic accountant, they're very good. They do their job. They are historians. They record, report what you have done in the past. They do not look forward to the future, and they do not plan for helping you to avoid repeating what you've done in the past. The second type is the one you want, which will help you take a look at where you're at, what for the upcoming year you could be doing to save in taxes, and how to make those changes so that you're not writing the big tax bill at the end of the year. So, you know, look for a good accountant, find a good investment advisor who will act as a fiduciary in your best interest. If they have questions on what type of plan they can do and how to do it, That is an area of expertise we certainly have and would be happy to share with anyone who wants to give us a call. You can reach me at Lexo, L-L-E-X-O-W, at Nicol, N-I-C-O-L, financial.com, or John Graney at J, G-R-A-N-E-Y, at N-I-C-O-L, financial.com. Send us an email. We'll be happy to help. No obligation, no expectation. We want to help people maximize their tax savings. Because I think you can do a better job with your money than the government ever will.
Mm. A lot of truth to that. So, strange news stories indeed. Well, Larry, I'm going to take after your example on marijuana last time and the stupidity of criminals, and I have one here. Garland, Utah. Police in Garland seized more than 36 pounds of illegal drugs.
Wow.
After a man called police to report he was being followed by multiple suspicious vehicles Sunday morning. Police chief said the 27-year-old man called around 3 a.m., said two suspicious vehicles were following him. Police responded to a service station off I-15 where the man had pulled over to meet them. The police said that the man seemed a little out of sorts, and it was obvious that he was on some drugs. Police were not able to locate any suspicious vehicles following the man, but they did find more than 36 pounds of methamphetamine.
Wow.
Which was sealed in food jars to conceal the contents. The street value of the drug was valued at more than $500,000.
Sampling the goods there, huh?
I guess so. So the suspect gave police a name along with an international passport, which was a forgery. And they're still trying to figure out his identity. So he was being booked on possession of marijuana, possession of methamphetamine with the intent to distribute, and forgery. So he called the police himself and said, hey, come get me, basically.
Yeah. Sounds like my Australian story about the gal who was complaining about her drug dealer raising the price of marijuana and called the police to complain.
So anyway, He called the police himself and said, hey, I'm being followed by mysterious vehicles.
Can't imagine who.
Oh, boy. So that's my story.
Well, I tell you, we must be on a theme here. In fact, I know we are. This is a story of the unluckiest dumb criminals ever. You got to laugh. I mean, these are almost unbelievable. This was a trio of drug thieves. They thought it was their lucky day. They broke into a home in Silver Springs, Florida, and they discovered three jars of cocaine. And they thought, wow, you know, jackpot. We found three jars of cocaine, busted in, you know, got away with it. So they took the cocaine home. And over the next, I guess, however long that takes, so I don't know if it's a day or a week or a month, but over the next period of time, they effectively snorted the contents of all three jars of their cocaine. And it wasn't until after the fact that they discovered that the jars actually were, in fact, urns. And that they couldn't understand why they didn't get a buzz, and they had snorted the cremains of the victim's two dogs.
So, oh.
So they dumb criminals.
Man.
Yeah,
I would think that ashes would look different than cocaine.
Maybe this
from what I've seen in the movies, cocaine looks like sugar.
I have no idea, but this
anyway
must have been their first time, and they thought, man, he hit the jackpot, and they snorted it, and
wow.
It was just like,
okay. Well, that's a tough one.
That didn't work. Yeah, it's a tough one to beat.
So
dumb criminals.
Let's give a shout out to the Chef Shop. Again, thank you to Scott and Nancy for their continued support of our crazy show. We certainly appreciate it. And what coffee are you sampling today, Mr. Alexa?
Well, today we have the Aztec Harvest Organic Coffee. Mm-hmm. It's the finest organic coffee grown in Mexico. So we're doing a little Mexican coffee here, John. Purely legal.
Though. Goes with my burrito index.
Yeah, your burrito index and my Mexican coffee. Coffee is naturally produced on a small farm without the use of any pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, or any other sides, or synthetic fertilizers. And it is a good hearty coffee, what I would consider, and something that I will continue to use. Go by the Chef Shop. One of our favorite people, shout out to Kathy Parks, who is our compliance officer at Nichols. She went to visit the chef shop, I believe on Saturday. It was either Friday or Saturday last week with her husband. And she met with Scott, as she shared with me. And before they walked out of there, they ended up spending, let's just say, a significant amount of money.
I see Kathy as being that serious shopper.
It's very serious. They've been scouting it out, her and her husband. He wanted one of the big cookers, you know, the green egg cookers. And they went and they got it and, talked to the folks at the chef shop. And of course, if you go in, you don't have to spend tons of money. Go in, buy some popcorn, which is just wonderful. The fudge, of course, obviously, and the coffee. So go in, spend a little money. Even if you don't, get some free samples, look around. You'll find something you want. Let them know you heard us on WSIE-FM, The Sound Radio, and you'll get a free T-shirt and a coffee cup to put your coffee in. So let them know it's a chef shop, 2320 Troy Road, Edwardsville, Illinois. They're in the Schnucks Plaza right next to Target. Phone number 618-659-9840. At chefs.shop at prodigy.net. Go online, check them out, let them know you heard us. Go in, say hi. It's a great day with the weather for February, certainly being as good as it is, to go visit and see what new products they have for the season. So I guess that kind of gets close to wrapping us up for today, John. So tax time is coming March 15th for corporations, April 15th for individuals, unless you extend. There is still time to put money away on a pre-tax basis for 2016. A lot of people don't know that. It's the only type of qualified plan that you can do after the end of the calendar year. So if you have a question on that, give us an email, give us a call, let us know. We'll be happy to help you out. Thanks to Steve Jankowski and Daryl. Certainly best wishes to him. He's off for a little health adventure, and he'll be back next week. So I hope he's listening on Saturday. Shout out to him. Glad he's doing well. We'll see him, see Steve in upcoming weeks. And thanks to the university, the board of trustees, and anyone else who has given us the opportunity to come share
listen to us
a little financial information relating to the world today, because it certainly is challenging, that's for sure.
And our next show will be covering different types of insurance that you should consider if you're a business owner. That will be our topic of the week. Our in the market, we'll be just talking about this crazy stock market and what does all this upward movement mean. And then, of course, we'll have our crazy news stories.
Can't wait to hear what that one is by next week, John. All right, we'll wrap it up for today. Say goodbye, John.
Goodbye, John.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nicholfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nicholfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private.
If I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million,
if I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.